continuing with our focus on the COVID-19, otherwise known as the coronavirus. It's a medical concern which needs more than an addressing by medicine. I know it's strange to say, but regulations and policies also play a role. Many people overlook this aspect. Many believe that in this situation, we are realizing the ways that overregulation can complicate things when a new medical challenge like this arises. Here to explore this and other aspects as an expert with the Regulatory Transparency Project and their FDA and Health Working Group. He's also the former medical director of molecular pathology at the Cleveland Clinic and former advisor to the FDA, CDC, CMS, and HHS, Dr. Roger D. Klein. How are you today, doctor?
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me.
To learn more about the Regulatory Transparency Project, regproject.org, and you can follow Dr. Klein at Roger D. Klein. That, of course, is on Twitter. Just to set a foundation for the listener as far as the medical side is concerned with regard to the coronavirus. In my past, I had a couple of bouts with strep throat. If you dealt with strep throat, can you pretty much, unless you are one of the exceptionally at-risk groups, the older respiratory, COPD, things like that, but by and large, if you've dealt with strep throat at some point in your life, you could probably deal with the coronavirus on your own?
Well, I it's hard to liken those two. Most people who get strep throat are children. So typically, if you've had strep throat, you had it as a child or as a young adult, and in that population group, currently the virus seems to have a very mild course, and we haven't heard about a lot of serious episodes or deaths in that group. So from that standpoint, yes. But strep throat is a common bacterial infection. This is a virus that would be more analogous to a flu, but would have similar symptoms and means of spread, which seems to be, and I think we know enough now to say with reliability, is worse in the elderly and people who have pre-existing medical conditions.
I was reading some research too. It's in a way, this virus is basically a combination of two genomes from separate viruses that creates what is known as the coronavirus.
Well, I think this particular coronavirus is very, very similar. It's almost identical on a percentage basis in its structure to a bat virus. It's made of a genetic material called ribonucleic acid, or RNA. What a virus really is, it's just a particle. It's not even really the same as a living molecule. It's just that piece of nucleic acid surrounded by proteins and fats, and that of course makes it more readily transmissible in many cases and difficult to deal with. But it really is very, very similar to a virus that has been known to circulate in bats, and of course it's in the same class as SARS, which also came from a bat, and other viruses that they call coronaviruses.
And regarding the difference between a virus and a germ, does a virus have a longer lifespan, which is why it's more spreadable versus a germ, which, depending on the specifics, a germ can die on a surface within 90 minutes, I believe.
Yeah, so viruses are strange. They don't live in the same, they don't have a life in the same way that a bacterium does, because viruses don't have cells. So cells are sort of the elements of what we think of as life, and bacteria have cells. You have genetic material, but then you also have what's called the cytoplasm, or liquid that's mostly water, but lots of proteins and fats surrounding it. A virus is really just a piece of nucleic acid surrounded by proteins and fats, and it doesn't independently exist. It doesn't reproduce outside of the human body. It has to make use of human cellular material. It doesn't have its own, and so it's strange. A bacterium is really an independent living organism. That's why you can treat bacteria with antibiotics, but you can't treat viruses with it. Viruses are they can hang around and lay on surfaces for a while, and but they don't live unless they're in a classic sense. They need to take over your cells in order to live.
So Roger D. Klein, who is an expert with the Regulatory Transparency Project, also former advisor with the FDA, CDC, CMS, and HHS, at Roger D. Klein on Twitter, and learn more about the Regulatory Transparency Project, regproject.org. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. You recently wrote an article we've linked to over to our webpage, too, regarding, as I said in the introduction, there's a regulatory issue that we're finding, well, not for the first time. We see this quite often. I mean, just as a comparison, I've had past connection with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. There have been drugs tested for neuromuscular diseases which advance much faster in places like Great Britain and Israel versus here in the States. And that showed a vast difference with how fast a drug can be made ready for patients with an obviously dire need. Are we seeing similar situations with overregulation in here in the States with what we're dealing now with the coronavirus?
Absolutely, and I think in this case it's proved very serious. The problem has been in diagnostic testing, and FDA has been allowed to essentially take control of the diagnostic testing. So if you look back in time to the, for example, the swine flu epidemic, hospital laboratories were free to set up their own tests, and they did so right away. We started testing, and we got our hands around, or we were able to get around this. That epidemic very quickly because we knew who was positive, who wasn't. We quickly learned what the characteristics of the disease were, and we were much better able to manage it. In this case, initially, what FDA did was they prevented hospitals from doing their own testing. Then they delegated essentially all testing in the United States to a public health agency, the Centers for Disease Control. More or less turned it into a diagnostic kit manufacturer. So instead of relying like for most tests, many tests, we don't set them up in the hospital. We purchase them from outside companies. Instead of doing that, CDC was in control. And of course, they're a great public health agency, but as it turns out, socialized diagnostic test kit manufacturing probably isn't the best route to go. And their initial tests, which they were only giving to public health laboratories. I'm not sure who made that decision, but not hospitals, not local testing, but entities that really exist for the purpose of epidemiology and fostering public health, not for treating patients. They sent the kits there, and because there's a design issue with it, they're prone to contamination, and so they weren't able to validate them. So we essentially had CDC as the only testing site in the United States for weeks, the critical weeks in the epidemic when the virus was circulating, especially in the Seattle area. And University of Washington was ready to go with a test. They'd been working on it. They were able to get it up and validated, and FDA wouldn't let them use it. And as a result, people weren't getting tested. They had a large capacity. They started out with 1,000 ability to do 1,000 a day. And so finally, just recently FDA allowed them to do the testing, but had they been able to provide testing earlier, that virus was circulating there for weeks and maybe they would have picked it up. We've had over 24 people died in a nursing home where there was an outbreak there. And if we had been able to test, maybe we could have prevented it.
And before that change in the policy, well, technically it's not a change in the policy. The policy still exists on the books. It was just the CDC saying, okay, here's the exception to the rule for this particular situation. But what about all those tests that were sent to the CDC are now sitting on a shelf somewhere waiting their turn in the test tube, so to speak? What's going to happen to those tests? Is there some way to expedite that now where they can ship tests back? Is that medically risky to do because of more handling of a test makes the test less viable?
No, they can. The problem isn't the test. The problem is that CDC is not a test. It doesn't belong in CDC. The problem is FDA. And what should have happened was we should have done what we normally do with almost all testing in the United States. We let the hospitals do it. And so, we have large commercial labs that do a significant chunk of testing for outpatients. They're involved now in setting it up, but they can't turn it around for several days. If you have to send your test to a public health laboratory, you're not getting it back for days. You can't have a person come in and you suspect this coronavirus and have them sit there. What will happen without local testing is, if we get any large-scale spread, people would come in to get tested, and they have to be put into isolation. And if they're negative, they're wasting an isolation bed. Not only that, but you can't test their you won't know to test their contact. We can't respond unless we have local testing. CDC is fine. It's fine with their test kits. There's not going to be an issue. They're sending them out to public health labs and I think hospitals. But there are even problems with that test and getting. You know, now more hospitals are involved. But I got to tell you, what I'm hearing is that there are issues with it, and the hospitals could do a much better job. Just let them do their job. Let them do what we do all the time. I've set up many, many tests. I run many labs of this nature. What needs to be done is to let the hospitals do their work. They have highly trained professionals who spend years learning how to manage laboratories and do diagnostic testing. What needs to be done is to let them select the way they want to do it, which fits into their hospital workflow, fits into their hospital patient population. That's the whole key to solving the problem, because once we get testing, once we have widespread reliable testing, we'll know what we're dealing with, we'll be tracking it, monitoring it, and we'll understand the disease and understand how severe it is.
And that will also cut down the risk of it spreading because of people not getting tested or waiting for the results of testing. And that 10% serious versus 90% not serious ratio could hopefully go down sooner versus later.
Of course, the whole question that we have now is, we have lots of people presumably walking around with this virus who have mild or no symptoms, and especially young people. We don't know who they are or how many of them are there. So we can't calculate a death rate. We don't understand what the denominator is. Anybody who dies of an unexplained respiratory virus right now is probably going to get tested for coronavirus. So you're going to pick up all of the deaths, but then you don't know who the people who don't die are. So we're going to overestimate the population death rate. Maybe we'll be more accurate in some patient groups than others, but we don't understand it unless we can test locally and quickly. In a hospital, you can get the test. The hospitals could set up tests, and they could turn it around the same day. You could, instead of waiting 3 to 4 days, you could get the result back the same day. This is a critical issue in an epidemic.
And even in the most rural of areas with the smallest of hospitals, with the technology we have today with teleconferencing, it's not a matter of traveling to do training even anymore like it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, rural hospitals would be an issue, but I think there are ways to address it. And for example, if you have medical facilities that are nearby, I think most of this testing is going to need to be done, at least at this point, by entities of some size. And if you're far from a major city, you're going to have that same issue. You probably have to send it away. And that's certainly where the large commercial labs will be helpful. But I think what's important to understand is the number of people who are living in those areas and the number of people who are probably exposed to this is going to be lower. It's not the real danger is in the more heavily, more densely populated areas.
Sure.
Where people can't help but be in close contact with other people.
Well, as you say, to be determined, and hopefully what Dr. Klein is talking about is not going to fall on deaf ears. It's great to look at things on the financial aspect of things with the markets and the financial structure of the country, but to look at the mechanics of how to address this process through the medical network and the true experts without over-inundating and overburdening with regulations or limitations, that's something Dr. Klein wrote about in the article that we've linked to over to our page as well. You can also follow Dr. Klein on Twitter at Roger D. Klein. Learn more about the Regulatory Transparency Project at regproject.org. Dr. Roger D. Klein, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.